This is Community Transformed with Father Thomas Dubé.
Greetings, and welcome to our new series, Community Transformed. I'm Father Thomas Dubé, Amerist priest. I'm going to begin our series with a story. Not mainly because people generally like stories, but because this one has a point to it. St. Bernard of Clairvaux is on my list of 10 most impacting people in my life who've had most influence for good on me. Bernard was famous in his day, even though there was no television, no newspapers, no radio. He was a man of towering talent. And even better than his talent was he was burning with love. He was a saint. Burning with love, first for God and then for his fellow men and women. Just an amazing man. Anyhow, my story is simple, but it's profound. Saint Bernard lost one of his blood brothers in death, and being a priest, he celebrated Mass for his brother, and he gave the homily. And in my day, I've heard lots of funeral homilies and been at funerals, and I've read a number of them, but I've never read anything that comes close to Bernard and what he said about his brother in death. Bernard, a virile man, fearless, can't go into all the details why he's so tremendous, but he was virile and he was famous and he was fearless too. But he was so tender in his love for his brother. I don't weep easily, but the way Bernard spoke of his brother could easily prompt tears in me, and I suppose a lot of people. Now, why do I mention this? I mention it because Bernard is almost an icon, not divine, of course, but so profoundly transformed by God that he can serve as a kind of picture, an icon in a way, of what our whole series is about. Gospel community. He summarizes it beautifully in his person. And that's why I begin with him. But first of all, I want to, before we get into the subject matter of what we have to say, I want to pose a problem. You'll notice our title is community and then transformed. And that second word is immensely important. And the problem I want to pose is probably in the minds of at least a good number of you. It certainly is in my mind. In the last 2, 3, 4 decades, the mass media in our land, and I think it is similar elsewhere in the first world, have almost inundated us with articles about human relations and community, and especially articles, writings, TV, columns, advice columns, and all kinds of things, talk shows, inundated us with what they have to say about marriage and other communities. But mostly it's about marriage. Now, I'm not saying this to look down upon what they've produced. I think most of it has been worthwhile. Some of it, of course, not, but much of it has. Now, the problem I'm posing is this. You might say to me, and I would understand it because I'm saying it to myself, are you going to spend 13 programs on something that's been talked about almost endlessly? I think there has been more printer's ink spilt on the subject of human relations and community in the last 2, 3 decades than in all the rest of our age of the printed word. I think so. And the problem, therefore, is more of that? My answer to the problem is this. No, I am not going to talk about what you have read about and heard about so frequently. I want to pick up where the human level should take off into the divine. I'm going to suppose good things that others have said, and in the press and in the electronic media, I'm going to suppose all that, but we're going to go light years beyond it, because this is going to be gospel community, and that changes the thing. It's part of the spiritual revolution that St. Paul talks about to the Ephesians. So that is where we're going. Now, I want to begin our discussion of gospel community and the transformation of it. It will take 13 programs to discuss it with some adequacy, though we will still have to leave a fair bit unsaid because there's just so much richness to it and beauty. Now, I want to begin with what I'm going to call a stark contrast between the state of marriages and other communities in our own day. And then I'm going to be talking about what do we mean by community and what exactly are the communities that we envision and so on. We'll get to that as part of this introduction. But first, the stark contrast between what we find in our day and what the gospel proposes. It is stark, the contrast. I have in my hand a whole sheaf of articles that appeared in the press in recent years. And I just want to give you a flavor. I'm certainly not going to share them with you. I don't have time. I'd love to. It'd be still starker if I gave you details. I have a little bitty article that appeared in the London Times. Its title is Battered Wives. And it talks about battered wives in a particular shelter where the woman running it was brought into court because it's overcrowded with battered wives, just to get the feel of things. In the United States, I have a little bit of article here. It was in Time magazine, where a couple of men, yes, both men, wrote a book called Wife Beating, The Silent Crisis. And in this article, they estimate that there are 28 million battered wives in the United States, and husbands about 12 million. Staggering. If you had said to me 28,000 and 12,000, I'd be wow, that's awful. They're supposed to be loving each other. Wow. And then just about 2 weeks ago, I was flying to Oregon to give a retreat on the West Coast to some monks. And I read in the magazine, the airline magazine, just this little snatch. Fits certainly what I've already said. One-third to one-half of women in the United States fall victim to domestic violence in the course of their lives. The biggest problem is that domestic violence is a hidden issue, says Striegel. It's something people don't want to talk about. And until you bring it up, they won't talk about it. And it just recalls to my mind, not that long ago, I read some other article where the author said they had a study and they found out that the average couple, no, it's not an average couple. On average, married couples have a fight about once a month. Not a pleasant discussion about a disagreement. That's not a fight at all. A fight, a battle, at least verbal, if not physical. And then, so I've got all kinds of articles. Another one here in the daily paper says 80% of all marriages are troubled. And it goes on to add in the article, only 2 out of every 10 couples have a vital, alive, growing relationship. Now notice, there's no question here, apparently, of a gospel ideal. Only 2 out of 10 alive, vital, growing relationships. I'd like to think that they're both blossoming as human persons, being fulfilled beautifully, reaching what we all of us ought to reach. But the evidence doesn't support that hope. Then there's an article here, I'm almost finished. I want to get rid of this fast. But overseas, some places, the battering problem is not even recognized as a problem. At least here in the United States, we consider it a problem. But some countries, it's so common that it's just taken, I guess, as a part of life. And so it goes. I have quite a bit more, but you get the feel. Now, I want to indicate the stark contrast between what community often is. By the way, I know, as you do, there are beautiful marriages and beautiful convents and beautiful monasteries, and I understand that very well. But the overall picture is not famous, to say it mildly. Now, I want to contrast that with the New Testament. In John's Gospel, just two texts. There are so many texts in the New Testament about this subject that we won't have cited them all when we come to the end. John's Gospel, chapter 17... first sample, Last Supper, Jesus is praying to the Father. And among things he prays about is this, 17:23. With me, praying to the Father, with me in them, the indwelling presence, and you, Father, in me, the inner Trinitarian community shown in our setting here, with me in them and you in me, may they be so completely one. Notice the adverb, completely one. Not just rather cordial and pleasant and generous and all, saintly one. That's what it means, completely one, that the world will realize that it was you who sent me. In other words, your community, whether you're a priest or a nun or a married man or a married woman or single, your community is supposed to be a miracle. You are so completely one that the world concludes the incarnation must have taken place. This could not happen on a merely human level. And of course, as we see through the whole series, it doesn't happen and can't happen on the human level unless certain conditions and situations are fulfilled. Then it does happen. Unspeakably beautiful. Now, the other text we look at to get the taste of the contrast is in the second letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians. It is chapter 3, verse 18. Speaking of the Holy Spirit, Paul says, "We, with our unveiled faces, reflecting like mirrors the brightness of the Lord, are transformed from one glory to another into the image that we reflect. This is the work of the Lord who is Spirit." The community we're talking about, the gospel community, is described beautifully here. It's a transformation from one glory to another. Now, this might strike you as utopian. Just wait as we go on and see the picture throughout the whole series. It is a transformation. It's way beyond what human beings can produce of themselves. We are transformed from one glory to another into the image that we reflect, godliness. This is the work of the Lord who is Spirit. And that is the fact. A marriage, for example, that is what it ought to be. A convent, that is what it ought to be, is the work of the Holy Spirit. But we have to play our part, be open to it, and do what we can do and should do. Then it really happens. The solution, therefore, is gospel community. And I'd like to give you two other texts to indicate a little flavor of the program. Certainly not everything. It's going to take us 13 programs to get a fairly full picture. But we'll get just a taste with these two texts. I'm turning to Ephesians chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. "I implore you," says Paul, and he's writing mostly to lay people, "therefore, to lead a life worthy of your vocation. Bear with one another lovingly." Not snapping, lovingly. Not coldly, not criticizing, not nagging. Bear with one another. Notice, we've got faults. And Paul knows that. And this is the way we handle them. Lovingly. In complete selflessness. Notice, complete. Not just rather. Complete. Gentleness. Complete gentleness and patience. Do all you can to preserve the unity of the Spirit. Right? That's the program. We'll see that and much more in considerable detail as we go along. The other text I should like to cite to you at this point to get the feel of where we are going is found in the first letter of Peter, chapter 1, verses 22 and 23. "You have been obedient to the truth and purified your souls until you can love like brothers in sincerity. Let your love for each other be real and from the heart." Now notice in that text, if you're very sharp, you may have picked it up. Probably did. There are two conditions before we have in our communities the love we're supposed to have. Paul, by the way, notice, takes the example of an ideal sibling love, a brother for his sister or brother for brother and sister for... an ideal blood relationship, that's the way you and I are supposed to love other people. In the supermarket line, too. Although that's not one of our primary communities to be in a supermarket. But nonetheless, we're supposed to love other people as though we were blood related, that deeply. Notice the two conditions necessary that this will happen. The first one is obedience to the truth, acceptance of the divine word. That will transform. Not only it does transform, but you've got to accept the word, obedience to the truth. And purified your souls. Purified means get rid of egocentrism. All our selfish little clingings. Got to be my way. Too bad about you. And if you displease me, I'll let you know it in no uncertain terms, you see. Purified your souls. And then you can love as you're supposed to love. But notice, it's not going to happen until we accept the divine word. That is what transforms. And we've got to get rid of our egocentrism. Now, that will be spelled out in considerable detail, plus a lot of other things, as we go along in our 13 programs. Now, I should next like, we're introducing the whole series. I'd like to introduce the clarification of terms. What do we mean here by communities? We are talking about groupings, of course, and most of all, we envision what sociologists call the primary communities, like marriage is a primary community, priesthood is a primary community, so is consecrated life. All right? We're talking mostly about them, but we are also talking about other closenesses, say, a single parent with her children, or a single parent with family, parents. You see, that would be a primary community also. Therefore, we include, together with what I've just said, convents, monasteries, and parishes too. They're different, but they are a community too. Now, in a wider sense, aside now from the primary communities, in a wider sense, we're including people, say, who are together in a nursing home. Not a primary community, but it's living together. You see, very much so. Or people in a boarding school, or even in a shop or an office. But we're getting wider and wider, as you can see. But that should be, especially if they are all Christian people, it should be the sort of thing that we're talking about in the series. Now, the next thing that we have to do is to say a few words about what gospel love is. Because that is the love that's to be present in a gospel community. And we're going to take it for granted for the rest of the series. If you look at a dictionary, you will find that there could be easily 10 or 12 definitions, a pretty complete dictionary, of what love means. Even love in tennis, which means 0 points. But that has a very different meaning of the word. Now, in common uses, the first definitions that you find in a dictionary, I jotted them down, by summary form, the first definition was, that I found, feeling of affection toward another because of kinship or qualities. It's a feeling toward another, and that's good. A second definition was attraction, especially a strong attraction. I think this is what people mean, by the way, when they talk about love at first sight. It's not really love. You've got to be really purified to love another person, as we shall see shortly. But in any event, a strong attraction, how beautiful this person is, what lovely qualities, what a sparkling personality. This attraction, that can happen at just about first sight, you see. And so that is a way the word is used in society. And there's validity to it, too. But it's still not gospel love yet. A third definition that the gospel gives by love is a sexual arousal or sexual intercourse, sexual relations. And that is what is used and meant by the term to make love. Everybody knows that. And that in a committed marriage, open to life and God's plan, nurturing eternal little beings, tremendous privilege and greatness, children. When that is found in the right context, this is also beautiful and good. Now, let's take a look at the gospel definition. It is so rich, and I have written out a little summary definition of it, and I'd like to notice 7 points in the definition, because this is the gospel concept. The gospel accepts the goodness in what we've said already, but it goes way beyond that level, the human level, because much of the human level, you notice, is shared with animals. Animals are very good beings, too, of course, but our love is to be a human love. So we accept gladly what is in those definitions, but the gospel goes way beyond them. Here is my definition. I'll go over it. I'll give it to you, then I'll go over 7 points in it. It is so rich. Love for the gospel is a self-sacrificing, willed concern for and giving to another, even if attraction and feeling are absent, and even if little or nothing is received in return. Let's go over that rapidly. In genuine love, a person gives of himself or herself to another. And it's a sacrificing giving. Now, often the giving is delightful, but it's also very often a sacrificing thing. Secondly, notice it's willed. It's not simply felt. We may have the feelings, and that's good, but they might be absent. And often in human life, they are absent. It's a self-sacrificing, willed concern, willed. So it's something we can freely control. And here we are way beyond the mere animal level. It's a willed concern for and giving to another. And the giving is in all kinds of little nitty-gritty things. It's not only money, it's not only Christmas gifts or a wedding gift. It's a constant kind of giving. A willed concern for and giving to another, even if attraction and feeling are absent. And they will be absent. Does a person experience for 30 years on end the romantic love and attraction and delight on marriage day, wedding day. Nor does a young nun experience all the time the joys and blessings of her profession day, nor a priest of his ordination day. Your feelings will be absent, at least at times, and that's routine in human life, not a surprise. So, nonetheless, the willed concern, the self-sacrificing, giving to another, even when all the feelings are gone. And finally, even if little or nothing is received in return. So your wife snaps at you, or you snap at her. You don't return it if you're living gospel love. You're gentle, you're understanding, and so on. You might have to say something firmly, but it's done gently. That's all part of gospel love, and we're going to take that definition for granted as we go through the series. We're not living a purely natural kind of life. Therefore, let me just mention a couple of my favorite examples of gospel love. I like to think, for example, that as we're talking right now and you're listening, there may be a couple missionaries of charity in Calcutta who are picking up somebody in the gutter, some abandoned poorest of the poor, as Mother Teresa would put it and has put it, and they're picking that person up, dirty, filthy, suffering, close to death, put them on their shoulders, or maybe they have a cart, I don't know how they do that, but they bring them to their shelter. And they wash and bathe this person and medicate whatever medication might be needed, and they show a lot of love for that individual, treat him or her as worthy of human dignity, as indeed that person is. That is genuine love. Let's go over our definition and notice. It's a self-sacrificing. Indeed, it's a self-sacrificing. That is not a pleasant thing to do. It's a willed concern. Notice there's a real concern, and it's a willed thing. They don't do this because of natural attraction. Of course not, because it's genuine love. The attraction might be there, and that's wonderful, but often in this case I'm giving, it's not there. It's a willed concern for and giving to another, even if attraction and feeling are absent, and even if little or nothing is received in return, and they might get nothing at all from this person. On the other hand, they might get a smile, they might get a word of thanks, but maybe they don't. In any event, those two nuns picking up this person and caring for the individual in ways that aren't pleasant often, that is real gospel love. Now, I'd like to share with you a statement of Hans Urs von Balthasar. I consider him the best theologian of our century, and a lot of other people do as well. He's talking about the very same thing we're talking about, namely Christ on the cross. That's the picture of love. Says he, von Balthasar, it is face to face with Christ crucified that the abysmal egoism of what we are accustomed to call love becomes clear. So much of what in our life is called love is abysmal, as he puts it, egoism. And I think you know what I'm referring to. Sometimes what is called love is just lust. No concern for the other person at all. What can I get out of you? A mere thing, you see, is the way that individual is treated. So it's on the crucifix, the Lord, there is the perfect picture of genuine love, a total self-giving for another and nothing received in return, because he died for us sinners. We'll take up now with the main areas of our program next week. Thank you, and God bless.
You have been listening to Community Transformed with Father Thomas Dubé on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.